the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevevick.com, your Triple Crown season has come to an end. And certainly satisfying, right? I don't know what else you could have had for a wrap-up to the intense five-week run, and of course the culmination of the winter season, really, signaling the harbinger, right, of summer. Well, it was a weekend that certainly had its share of star performances. I whenever we get to a day like this, it's always, you know, it's always overwhelming when you look at the list of winners and the performances and assess the storylines. And, you know, going into Friday, because we got to include the, you know, the prequel on Friday into Saturday, the big, you know, the big issue that everybody had, it seemed, a lot of people had, was, you know, the stake field size. And yeah, I haven't actually had this discussion with anybody. We've talked more about individual performances, but I mean, personally, I don't know. I found things to bet on. Bet a lot of multis and bet the 2 days. You know, hit fair share. The best, maybe for, personally, the best return for me was the turf, you know, the turf pick three, that $3 turf pick three ended up, I thought, being a, you know, a real nice spot. The 2 day, $2 pick four was a big pop. I missed it, but for those that hit, it was lucrative, to say the least. And I'm cautiously approaching which performance to laud and which horse to mention first. You know, not that this is, you know, not that this has to be like the Politburo, you know, lining up on May Day. on the wall of the Kremlin, but undoubtedly it is Belmont Stakes Racing Festival. So, I mean, ultimately the Belmont is the race that, you know, defines the weekend. And for the 3-year-olds and for Todd Pletcher, and I don't have to, you know, I don't have to remind anybody how often I talk about, you know, the incongruity of criticism of Todd Pletcher's Derby record. And maybe this is the tipping point for the appreciation of Todd Pletcher's Belmont record. He doesn't participate much in the Preakness, but what he's fashioned in the Belmont is Woody Stevens-esque, and Pletcher doesn't need to, you know, to win six in a row to go into that category. But what he has done, and I don't think it can be questioned at this point, in an era where, you know, collectively people deride you know, the stamina capabilities and the distance orientation of, well, in this case, you know, three-year-olds. Pletcher has amassed this unbelievable record. And remember that he's been beaten in this another couple of times by the narrowest of margins. I mean, he, by all rights, with a head bob here or there, he's got six wins in the Belmont. But the fact that he so consistently puts horses in the gate in this race, 12 furlongs, early June, that he's identified horses that are going to appreciate the distance and the way in which this race needs to be approached. So, and as I've tried to explain a number of times, you can take the list of horses that Todd Pletcher brought to the Derby, and two-thirds of them had no business even making the Derby, especially the early part of his career, when graded earnings were the way to get into the gate for Derby. Todd Pletcher got all kinds of horses there that were middle-distance horses, 7/8, one turn, miles, that type, even sprinters, even raw sprinters who, you know, wanted a mile and a 16th, might have even, you know, won the mile and an eighth races, but really were not classic, didn't have classic pedigrees, didn't have, you know, the kind of even the, you know, the physical builds necessarily that were going to, you know, travel well at 10 furlongs. And so I it makes me nuts when Pletcher gets criticized because he hasn't won enough derbies. I preferred the filly here. I was all in on Nest and keyed off of her. And in fact, we'll talk to Johnny later. And I haven't talked to Johnny. I mean, I've had a couple of texts with Johnny since Saturday, but Johnny, basically, in his analysis, he was all Pletcher all the time. And like Johnny, I don't think came away with anything, you know, from the race. I got some multi stuff in the late multi by having Mo Donegal, who was kind of my fifth horse. I had him on the late pick five ticket, which was nice, actually, to get that. That was a nice way to close out. They paid $440. It was all right. But the filly, a win from the filly, and I'm not going to get into I'll discuss it, I suppose, I can discuss it with Todd. But all right, I'll go ahead and say it. Don't you think that if the filly gets Mo Donegal's trip, if the filly's there instead of where she was, not that, you know, that Jose did not do anything wrong at all. I mean, he had her, you know, potentially in a position to win. But if she's got a little more of a clear path late, or not even that late, but, you know, midway on the stretch, let's say, if she doesn't have to idle there and then get out, and by that time Mo Donegal's, you know, on down the road, if they run this race 100 times and you know, you generally have the same scenarios for the most part, and you know, jocks make a couple of different positional decisions, the filly wins her share. Don't think for a minute that Nest wasn't winning that race under, you know, a potential, you know, potentially more favorable scenario. She was terrific. But Mo Donegal was that much better, and Arad Ortiz, who I saw where somebody was asked the, you know, kind of a volleyball question on Twitter, is it me or does it feel like Arad Ortiz is riding? Yeah, Arad Ortiz, I think, has been energized by the arrival of one Flavian Pratt. I think that and you know, the bringing the reshuffling of the deck of you know the top riders in the country, kind of all reassembling, you know, here post winter. Yeah, that, I think that may have kind of lit a fire. That it seemed like Arad was particularly thrilled to win, and so. You know, for Jerry Crawford and the Donegal Racing, for obviously for Mike Rapoli's involvement in both horses and in both of the finishers. And Rapoli had been, you know, Rapoli came in, he came in here, you know, he kind of jumped in at the quarter pole, but it but still, it, whatever. That you know, that's the environment, and. He'd been actually been involved with the filly, I think, from day one. So a rare scenario. In fact, there were so many things about that 1-2 finish that were incredible. Eric Mitchell wrote a terrific piece in Blood Horse about how Ashview, the Listers, and Rich Santulli, Colt's Neck, how they bred the Exacta. Todd trains the Exacta. You had brothers ride the Exacta. I'm sure a lot of you bet the exact. So, just crazy, really a wild scenario to close out this third leg of the Triple Crown, and you know, Franco Mo. Personally, when it came to Mo Donegal, one of the reasons I kind of shied away. I wasn't so convinced that the Pulpit Mare, I was kind of, I was like, meh, I wasn't sure. The horse that did not appreciate the distance, was certainly We the People, who you could see, was begging for the wire, you know, a mile and a 16th in. So yeah, that wasn't happening. But the top two and you know, Ness, certainly we talked about, was, you know, best, quote unquote, best bred for the trip, seemingly. So Curlin and the APND mare. So anyhow, just a very good conclusion to not just the stakes portion of the weekend, but the Triple Crown season. And, you know, we'll dissect it, dice it and chop it 50 different ways. In advance, obviously. Now's the time. Now is the time to appreciate the individual performances, you know, particularly in the, you know, in the spots where people were you know, less than enthused about the wagering opportunity that some of the races presented. And if we start with, let's start with Friday. I mean, Jackie's Warrior was just scary. I mean, Jackie's Warrior, he's in second gear, traveling in second gear, and everybody else has got their foot on the floor. That was quite terrific, that effort. And you could see that the horse of Chad, Sound Money, you know, who on paper looked like, you know, a horse that could potentially provide a little pressure, and really, in a lot of ways, that was the storyline, you know, throughout these individual performance scenarios. Flight Line Two, we'll talk to John Sadler this hour. Andy Beyer first, by the way, in about 10 minutes or a little bit less, for his traditional Triple Crown season wrap up, to kind of take stock of, to pull a line from Sid's Wednesday column, taking stock of the 3-year-olds at this point in the year, 98 buyer for Mo Donegal. But the Jackie's Warrior effort on on Friday. 107 buyer, and he's scary. That was again as impressive as you're gonna want to see. And you know, other than being upset by drain the clock last year on this same weekend in the Woody and in the Breeders' Cup, is been just tremendous. And it's interesting. I saw somebody say something which was really true. Yeah, after the Count Fleet, when people were like, "Well, gosh, is he? I don't know. Is he the same horse?" Well, yes, he's the same horse. So, Jackie's Warrior on that front got things kind of going. The rest of I'll come back to Friday for some of the other efforts. The flight line, obviously, and we'll talk with John Sadler. That was impressive for a few reasons. I mean, I don't think he did anything that wasn't expected per se at all. But there were a couple of the kinds of just little hiccups that that made it that enhanced the effort, and that was, the start, and then having to put on the brakes, and break momentum early, and then re-engage. And the fact is that the way in which he disposed of Speaker's Corner, I mean, for anybody that has watched what Speaker's Corner has done coming into this. He tossed him like a Kleenex. Nice effort, and however much flight line we get to see, I'm not going to speculate beyond that. Let's hear what John has to say. But for the partners, which included, Costa Aronis Racing, and Sienna, and Jane Lyon, who is having a ball, one of the nicest, absolutely one of the nicest people around the game, bred this horse out of the very nice feathered, and West Point. It's the kind of win you get involved in the game for, we can look forward, whatever it's going to be. We'll get a little bit of an update from Sadler in this hour. The other big single effort, Jack Christopher, who essentially replicated the Jackie's Warrior effort. Just was in control every step, and just obviously very exciting. And with that win tucked away, cutting back from the mile at Churchill, now they can look ahead and look toward the Haskell. And the Haskell, in fact, all the three-year-old exclusives of the summer, the Jim Dandy Travers and the Haskell, then later in September, Pennsylvania Derby, they're all going to be, titanic. One horse that Jack Christopher is going to encounter, we should mention, Cyberknife yesterday in an absolute thriller over Howling Time, and that was the right decision by Dale Romans to stay at, run out of your own stall in the Matt Wynn yesterday. That was... Either way, that was going to be a tough beat for one or the other. And if you haven't seen the photograph, just narrowest of noses. And so Cyberknife, and as I tweeted last night, a win in the Haskell for Al Gold would very much be an equivalent to Mike Rapoli and his desire to win the Belmont. Yeah, it took me a second, actually. The camera panned to Rapoli. It took me a second. I thought, wait a minute. Wait. Hadn't he won? But it was what, Stay Thirsty that got, right? That got beat. So I'll be down the road and look forward, of course, to getting to Monmouth. Those were some of the big, you know, the biggest efforts. The best race of the weekend, inarguably, and this is one of my complaints with where we are with these mega days and the mega weekend. If that Ogden Phipps is the ninth or tenth race on a card, you know, last Saturday or next Saturday, the people are like falling over themselves to find words to talk about how good that race was. And you know, yes, Letruska got, you know, kind of filleted here. The pressure from search results, amazing how search results at least stayed on, got beat, you know, two and a half lengths maybe to hold, not even hold third because Bonnie South was nowhere to be found, fourth. But Clairier and Malathat, they're dueling, Johnny and Joel Rosario, and it really looked for a good portion of the last, 300 yards, like Malathat had her, had Clairier's measure, and Rosario, you know, just in the last, you could just, I kind of needed Clairier, to be honest, and just in the last 3-4 jumps, you could see she kind of got her shoulder in front, and you could feel pretty good the last couple of frames to the wire that Clairier was going to win. That was terrific, and obviously raised the spirits for Team Asmussen and Team Stone Street. The story we haven't mentioned yet, of course, Echo Zulu scratching at the gate, and by the time she left the paddock and got to the gate, she was off in her left front, and the vets said no good, and she got scratched at the gate. And I mean, obviously that left the race at the Acorn, the Matarea, forget it. But the good news, and I reached out to Scott Blasi yesterday. Steve Asmussen was heading back to Texas, and Scott said, you know, and I'm sure you saw Dave Grenning's reporting, she was fine, and you know, they x-rayed, nothing, and she's going to Rude and Riddle. She'll be given the fine tooth comb treatment by Dr. Bramlage. So, you know, always better to make the cautious decision than take any single chance. Been focusing obviously on the dirt races to talk about the grass, and there were you know, plenty of tremendous efforts on the turf. And if you start with the Gold Cup, actually on Friday, the German Loft that came in from where Loft won, she had won at Baden Baden, or where, I forget what race Loft had won coming in here, but Andreas Stark with very confident handling. Those of us that were excited to see Holly Doyle, she will have to save her brilliance for another visit to the United States. I don't want to rough up Holly Doyle, but that is not going on a highlight reel on Outbox. That's for sure. Caravelle, I was kind of kicking myself in the Intercontinental there was Brad Cox, who, you know, raised his head and hand a few times on the weekend. The Saturday action, obviously, and starting with early in the card, and the Just a Game, you know, it was going to be at Chad Brown's disposal, obviously. Regal Glory is one of my favorite horses, and I don't have to tell you how I feel about Paul Pompa and the fact that we don't get to enjoy Paul's presence anywhere, not the least of which at the racetrack. But Regal Glory just is, I mean, she's just spectacular. And when we talk to Chad, it's gonna be interesting the rest of the way for Regal Glory, you know, staying in. I mean, she's got potential at this point, you would think, to entertain, you know, Teppanish type credentials, right? Looking at the numbers, she's 12 for 19. She's 12 for 19 for, 2-point-something million. That's her third grade one, I think, third or fourth. And I don't know. I would think that a Breeders' Cup win could make her a Hall of Famer. The ride that, it's funny, I got a personal reminiscence involving Louis Saez, but Louis Saez with Casa Creed, who, you know, had to, you know, was in the four hole, winning the Jiper a second time, and, you know, to say we're thrilled for Leon Seidler and partners, for Lee to repeat here and, you know, keep going on with this horse that he's had so much fun with. And Lee's had good horses, make no mistake. I mean, Timber Reserve and Mr. Sydney, and he's got High Oak, who's, you know, back on the farm right now, if you haven't seen an update, and you know, probably is going to take some significant time off. That spill at Gulfstream took a toll. There's nothing, you know, majorly wrong, but he just needs some time. So look for him down the road. But in the meantime, Lee's had so much fun with Casa Creed, and a modest purchase. Kenny McPeak picked Casa Creed out for Lee, and Louis Saez at the right time extracted him from, you know, the inside trip that they were getting, and he was like 8 miles the best. When he kicked outside, forget it. It was over. Tremendous job. And then here's Manny Franco, who also, you want to talk about a clever turf ride. What he did with Tribhuvan, and the key to, I mean, personally, the key to my day was having Tribhuvan, you know, as a player. He was like my fifth in there, and, you know, had him in that late last pick five that was the difference maker. He was the difference maker in the $3 pick three. But the difference was made by the way Manny Franco saw the opportunity to steal away. That was masterful. And Tribhuvan, who really, Chad Brown has done a fabulous job with. So there's your overall rundown. I didn't mention Fearless, you know, Todd's other winner on the day in the Brooklyn. Louis Saez is there. And in fact, Andy Beyer, who we're going to case, why don't we reach? We're a little late for Andy, so let's get Andy Beyer in here to start the conversations. And we'll juxtapose the Brooklyn and Belmont in particular. We'll get Andy's take. And then the only other race, what did we miss? The Bella Sophia, who was terrific in the Bed of Roses on Friday. And then, because we got right into things on Friday in the preview, weekend preview. For those, if you missed it, Consumer Spending won that Wonder again. And the two-year-olds, two of a kind for Brian Lynch with Saez, and Devious Dame for Norm Cassie with Joel Rosario. So there's your stakes rundown. And just in time for Andy Beyer to provide the discerning observations. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. I hope I'll be discerning.
Andy, we always get together after the Triple Crown races, and particularly after Belmont, to kind of take stock of where the three-year-olds are. Let's start with the Belmont and your evaluation of what we saw there and the way the Fig came up.
Well, you know, I thought, just as an overview, that this Triple Crown series was disappointing and disheartening enough in most ways that if the industry, you know, doesn't, you know, take a hard look at the structure of the Triple Crown now, they never will. I mean, to, you know, to have the, you know, the Derby winner skip the Preakness winner skip the Belmont, the Belmont, you know, drew, I thought, a really lackluster field of eight. This is our sports showcase, and I just didn't think it was too much of a showcase, and particularly the Belmont. The figure was a 98, which is even by kind of modern day standards, I mean, awfully weak for a race of this magnitude. And I mean, you look at, I guess, I underrated Mo Donegal, but you look at this field and you see that Skippy Longstocking was third in this race when his, you know, his previous top effort was in an N1X allowance race at Gulfstream. It was just hard for, I mean, I'm not a cynical guy. I want to root, you know, root for great horses too, but this was a fairly weak showing for not only for these specific horses, I thought, but for the industry.
And before we talk about the number, and I guess you could weave this in, how much of this, and maybe we think about the recent results in the Belmont, because it is early, you know, in, it's still relatively early in horses' 3-year-old careers. How much of this is the 12 furlong paradox that this is a distance that is just foreign to the majority of our racing these days. I mean, the Brooklyn will figure into the discussion, you know, momentarily. But,
I don't think it's a paradox. It's just a fact that, American horses are not, maybe unless they're by Tappet, are mostly not bred to run a mile and a half on the dirt, and breeders really don't care about, you know, winning at a mile and a half the way, you know, once did when the Belmont was, you know, like the test of a champion. I mean, a horse wins about a mile and a half, and in the, you know, in a lot of breeding circles, they say, well, he must be a plodder. You know, we want horses with speed. So I just don't think there just aren't mile and a half dirt horses around in any in any great numbers, and it's really an anachronism. I mean, I don't think we can change the Triple Crown and shorten the distance of the Belmont. I think, you know, many purists would be upset by that, but we've got to look at this Triple Crown structure a little bit.
Well, clearly, Randy Moss has been talking to you too often. You think you got to limit your exposure to Randy?
No, we often have differences of opinion, but I think that it is so clear now that the 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness, you know, is a real mistake. It's got to be lengthened, and I feel it is. You know, if you look at Triple Crowns in recent years, it really kind of cheapens the Triple Crown, because horses who lose the Derby, nobody wants to turn around and run 2 weeks later, except the Derby winner. So horses really get Derby winners get a free pass relatively speaking, in the Preakness in many cases. So I think that at a very minimum, to make a 3 week gap between the Derby and the Preakness, and then, you know, to take another look after that, is the way we've got to go.
All right. Well, we'll see how much how much more conversation goes forward from this. It certainly got more discussion, these 5 weeks, given what transpired with the Derby winner and subsequently. So we'll see if it. I don't know who's going to negotiate this between Maryland Jockey Club and NYRA, but we'll see.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say, talk about the timing and the Brooklyn, which does give you the benefit of a 12 furlong dirt race, earlier on the card, and some people wondered about the juxtaposition between the two races.
Yeah, I have to say I don't fully understand the Brooklyn. The whole rest of the card, the track variant, made perfect sense from start to finish, and there were a lot of interesting and impressive figures on this card, and they were solid as a rock. I felt the Brooklyn came up unusually slow, maybe the slow pace, a half and 56 furlongs and 1:15, impacted the final time. But the horses when you have a slow pace affect the time of a race, usually the horses are speeding up at the end. Nobody was speeding up at the end of this race. These horses had to have run a 95, I would think. But the race came up so freakishly slow that we kind of, excluded that from our variant, assigned it an arbitrary figure, and we're happy about all the other 12 races.
Let's talk about the Saturday in particular. And I know that we've had references to the Jackie's Warriors, and we talked about Jack Christopher after the Pat Day Mile, and here's Flightline, Andy, that it is obviously we're not going to see him every 4 weeks, this is a major talent. Where do you place him?
Oh, I think he's has the potential to be an all-time great. I thought that he should have been, even with only one stakes race, I mean, should have been the champion three-year-old last year. I mean, you look at what he's done and what he did last year. I mean, three races, 105, 114, 118, wins them all by double digits. But I thought he really... as great as he was last year, I thought he really enhanced his reputation on Saturday. When you think about what he was what he was being asked to accomplish, he had a setback. He's coming off a 5.5 month layoff. He's stretching out to a mile, which he's never run before, and he happens to be facing, you know, the best older horse in the country. And then on top of that, he doesn't break. You know, he has, you know, an imperfect trip, you know, kind of standing a little behind speaker's corner, and still blows him away, wins by six, runs a figure of 112. You know, what more can he do? I mean, I was, you know, after this race, I was, you know, trying to put him in this, into a proper historical perspective, and say, and complete this sentence: Flightline is the best American horse since blank. And this may be a premature judgment, but the I'm filling in the blank with Ghost Zapper in 2004. I mean, they're actually, you look at their three-year-old campaigns, they were kind of similar. You know, Ghost Zapper finished up with a, you know, with a figure of 116 at three. We're going to have to see how Flightline does when he stretches out further. But I think he's got figures in the 120s in his on his horizon if he's if he continues this progression. He's won them all with ease, and I just think the sky's the limit for him. And I kind of, you know, hate, I said on Saturday, I was discomforted, you know, I mean, with the fact that the public was, of course, focusing all its attention on the Belmont and, you know, and these, you know, kind of ordinary 3-year-olds, when we've really got a great horse right in front of us who should be the, you know, the showcase of horse racing these days.
Well, and, you know, to be fair, when we look at the older, you know, collectively, Andy, the older horses, they all came through. I mean, Jackie's Warrior on Friday, with 107. He's getting back. It looks like he's approaching, I think, what he had, the 110 in the Gallon Bob last year. Yep. You know, the race, and one of my frustrations with some of the discussion points about the field size going into the weekend. If the Ogden Phipps, I said this earlier this morning already, if the Ogden Phipps, Andy, was next Saturday, and even if you still had those five, I mean, people would be talking about that race, you know, in huge superlatives. After Saturday, nobody really even was paying much attention to Clairiere, yeah, and search results in Malathat, and that, I thought that was the race of the weekend.
I don't know about that, but she—I mean, Clairiere certainly stepped up. I mean, she's very good. That was a figure of 106, and I was glad to see Jack Christopher run that [S2] Yep. [S1] Race. I thought he should have been the 2-year-old champion hands down last year. He was, you know, just off of his champagne. I mean, he was in a class by himself. And I mean, so now he's run a figure of 107, which is, I guess, the best by any 3-year-old in the country this year. So we'll see about his distance capabilities, but he's a terrific talent. We've really got some good horses around.
Well, that's it, and you know, he's a 3-year-old, and we're going to see him. We're going to see him at two turns, the way things are shaping up in the Haskell. There's plenty to look forward to. And you know, I always caution people, like in March, Andy, and you know, we have this discussion, you know, people deride the quality of the 3-year-olds invariably on a premature basis. And, you know, they're going to continue to mature. They're going to, a horse like Jack Christopher can end up, you know, there's still time for him, I imagine, to, you know, to garner year-end laurels if he were to, you know, to win a couple more. You know, he's got, what, probably a chance at between the Haskell and Pennsylvania Derby, and go from there. But anyway, I just
and I will mention one other horse in the 3-year-old picture that we've kind of forgotten Epicenter. A little bit about. But Epicenter, I think is going to reestablish himself, as a leader of the generation. Of all the top trainers in the country, Steve Asmussen's horses really do improve with time. I mean, you look at horses like Gun Runner, who blossom relatively late in their careers. Epicenter really hasn't done anything wrong, and so I think he's going to be in the picture at the end of the year, and I hope Jack Christopher will prove to be a solid 2-turn horse, because he's obviously got the motor. I mean, he's got terrific talent.
Well, it's certainly been an entertaining, if nothing else, it's been an entertaining Triple Crown with the second longest price Derby winner in its history. It's kind of nice, Andy. I haven't mentioned what this win could ultimately do, actually, for the Wood Memorial as well, to have the Wood winner come back and win a Belmont.
Speaking of just backing up a minute to Rich Strike, one of the things that I thought was very interesting about this Triple Crown series was that with the public, Rich Strike and his win really resonated. More people asked me about this horse and what happened and could you have picked him and why did he run that race and with the TV coverage being so good about the focusing on the way the jockey rode him and the trip he had. People were enthralled by this horse. I'm sorry, he bombed out in the Belmont, but surprisingly, that performance really, I think, captivated the broad public much more than it did people in the industry.
Which is that's a positive. If it got people interested, that we're all for it. I mean, that works. That's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Andy, as always, I appreciate it. We're looking forward. We'll see you at the end of the summer, I suppose. We might talk before that because certain performances bring you to the fore, but.
I actually have a date circled on my calendar that I'm going to be calling you a day at Saratoga that we'll be talking about.
All right, I will let that. All right,
okay.
we'll use that as a classic cliffhanger. All right, I love it.
All right, good to talk to you, Steve.
Thanks, Andy. Andy Beyer, everybody. It's so great. I love it. I'm thinking, and they were, I forgot to ask, because I think the Beyers, they were away, I think. They had a trip. They had a trip over Preakness, and I forgot to... forgot to ask about that, but all right. Well, you can look forward to something this summer with Andy. I'm not sure. I'm going to think about this and try to figure out what he might be referring to. All right. Well, we're going to get John Sadler, and seeing as how Beyer just lauded Flightline and I knew he was going to say Go Sapper because much like Chad Brown, when it comes to when he's being asked about Jack Christopher, that's his touchstone is Go Sapper for Jack Christopher. So Go Sapper up on a pedestal, obviously. Looking forward to talking to John Sadler. And I should tell you also, when it comes to later, we'll check in with K Kev Humphreys. We'll get his Tuesday and Wednesday Royal Ascot pushes. We'll go through and see what Kev has got in mind. So we'll talk to him in Singapore. What are they, 12 hours? I didn't actually give Kev a time. So I'm going to, Kev, if you're listening, which he does regularly, I think 11-ish. But I think they're 12 hours, right? Here, let's do one of these. What time is it in Singapore? we'll find out right away. Here we go. All right, so it's 12. They're 12 hours, exactly 12 hours. Perfect. So that, yep. And Kev just answered. 11 is good with him. All right. So Kev Humphreys for the first couple of days of Royal Ascot, and yeah, this calendar this year. As we wait, Case, John, yeah, John, and John Sadler is with us, and we welcome and say congratulations to John Sadler on winning a Met Mile with Flightline. John, congratulations!
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, and a very successful trip to New York for the team, and all smiles, although those first, half dozen jumps, where there was a couple of, heart and throat kind of moments.
There really was, what made it such a remarkable win was, the overcoming the adversity. I kind of blame myself for the start. I think I've overschooled him in the gate. He used to be very aggressive in the gate, and I think I've taken him back and put him to sleep a little bit. So that's on me. And then, they rode him, tight down the backside. He had to check him a couple of times. And once he got him clear, then it was smooth sailing.
Being inside, and one of the themes, actually, of the day was some of the heaviest favorites on the card were at least morning line favorites. You, We the People, Lone Rock, Jack Christopher, Latruska had all drawn the rail, which added some intrigue. And for him, though, you would think that it would have to, there would have to be a stumble or, some sort of a thing happen. So for both of those things to happen, kind of a slow jump and then, to have to check a little bit. But the way in which he then, he just doffs Speaker's Corner, John, and this feels like one of those horses that must constantly, just make you say, wow, yourself.
Oh, all the time. I've told people right along, the first time we ever breezed him, I said, this is probably one of the best horses I've ever had, he's never hit himself if you've been around him, if you know what I mean. There's nothing he can't do in the morning. From a working standpoint, most of the training has gone into, teaching him to be calm and not to, go too fast early. He's the best horse I've ever trained by far, and one of the best horses I've ever seen.
You were busy at Santa Anita for the morning, but Andy Beyer was just with us, and Andy had posited the question even yesterday publicly. He asked, or at least maybe it was privately, maybe it was just the text he sent to me, but he said, John, Flightline is the best American horse since blank. And his answer was Go Sapper today.
His answer was Go Sapper?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's good. I don't know what my, I've been out here my whole life and seen so many great horses. I might say, you want me to fill in the blank?
Go ahead, yeah.
Spectacular Bid.
Wow, there you go. Oofa.
So we had, and I always leaned to horses that had a campaign out here. When he when he was here that winter with Bud Delp.
Right.
I mean, it was just really it was really amazing to watch him. If you looked at his Malibu, you know, Shoemaker drove him like a Porsche. You know, he let him run a little bit, then he'd kind of sit still for a little bit, and then, you know, made about three moves all effortlessly. It was an incredible race.
Well, this horse, and I want to start it. I know that the ownership group, has a certain structure, but it's hard not to kind of start with Jane Lyon here as well.
And absolutely,
for me,
yeah.
I mean, to me, she has her hand in so many of our recent outstanding horses, John. And I don't think she's gotten enough. I know she's gotten plenty of attention, but I don't think you can really say enough nice things about the broodmare she's put together and the decision that she and her team are making to produce these kinds of horses.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's a very special breeding outfit. I mean, obviously the quality just, you know, gushes out of your mouth how many nice horses they breed. So it starts there, and she's a lovely woman. And, you know, when I met her last year for the first time at Keeneland, after his first two races, she signaled me right away, you do what you think's right, what's best for the horse. And I said, well, we're starting off with the same principles. I'm not that we don't do that for every horse, but I'm just saying, you know, it, no matter how many horses I train, I love to hear that. You know, no matter, you can say that to me every day. It makes me smile.
On that topic, and then we'll swing back around to Costa and West Point and Siena, but
mm-hmm.
to that point,
and Woodford.
The handling of him, and we've talked now, you know, over the last year plus a couple of different times, and you've kept everybody, you know, you've been completely open about whatever hiccups and setbacks. How much of the handling is just incidental, you know, in terms of timing, and how much of it is, more specific, and how do you think you go forward from here?
Well, we're going to go forward with, you know, good spacing. The horse gets packed tomorrow, so, you know, I'm getting reports of videos today on him over there, and everything looks good. So, you know, we're just going to go forward, you know, with us like we have been, which is take our time, run him when he's ready. And, obviously we're pointing for the Breeders' Cup, so we'll work, you know, so that we're going to work back from there. So, we keep doing what we've been doing.
What makes this horse, juxtapose him, John, to some of your, you know, some of your recent successes, and you know, Accelerate obviously, and Higher Power come to mind. Just in terms of the decision making process, and understanding what can be, you know, what can be accomplished and what can be planned, you know, with him and his, you know, I don't want to say durability issue. Is durability issue an unfair characterization?
I think so a little bit, you know, because, you know, he's just been untimely a little bit, and he's an outlier. You know, like if you bought a car and its speedometer says 150, and then one day you were feeling good, and you went on the freeway, and you stepped on it, and all of a sudden the car was going 220. You know, well, the speedometer says they can only go 150. But this horse has got, you know, just special qualities, and he can do it. So you have to be a little mindful of that. You can't always apply all the traditional thoughts. Because this horse is doesn't fit in the group.
Now that he's gone a mile, because this was his first, you know, he had the the 6 and 7 furlong efforts. What is your plan of attack? And you know, he is a Tappet. He's out of feathered. Certainly going further. You know, I don't see why. You know, watching him in recent vintage, you would think. I mean, he's got kind of a Nick's Go feel to him, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Flavien got off him the other day, and after the race, there's a lot of hubbub. You can't really talk much, but he said, you know, distance is going to be his friend. We expect him to be better the further he runs.
How do you...
You know, he's not going to slow up, you know. It'll just be easier to control the race because, you know, he'll have a long time to... longer runs into turns, and, you know, he'll just have plenty of time to put himself in, think of the positions he can put himself in, you know. So we think longer is better. I've said that right along. It's just the circumstances, late getting to the races a little bit, was unfortunate. So, I mean, even though he's been brilliant, you know, at 6 and 7 and brilliant at a mile, no doubt about his abilities to handle the distance.
How do you introduce the two turns to him, and you know, from that standpoint, what's in the back of your mind as an approach?
Well, just keeping him relaxed. I mean, you know, that's the key with this horse. And Juan Leyva, my assistant's done a fantastic job. He's got about a 4-horse team of guys that, you know, worked with them exclusively, and they've all done a great job. I can't say enough about my help. They really are key. And Juan Leyva, who rides them and breezes them a lot, also done a brilliant job. I mean, I was telling everybody before this race, we had some extra time, and so when you have some extra time, what do we spend it on? We spend it on, you know, just keeping them calm, relaxed, getting them to relax better, you know. Sometimes somebody said, well, how does Juan describe riding? I said, Juan describes him like riding, he's like riding a hurricane, you know, so you that's what we spent our time calming him down.
Has there been a year-end goal specified when you've had discussions with the ownership team?
Well, we haven't really talked, since we had travel day yesterday and all everything like that. But, I mean, you know, the Breeders' Cup Classic is where we want to be at the end of the year.
There you go. So between the West Coast options and what lays out at Del Mar and at Santa Anita, and obviously, it's got to feel good to put him on a plane, too, John. Haven't even talked about that. It's got to feel good to know that he ships, so adroitly.
Yeah, it was good. You know, it wasn't easy travel. You know, going from Newark to Belmont is the hardest leg.
that's for everybody.
Yeah, early in the morning. And, I mean, you guys are probably well aware of that. That's the hardest stretch. You know, flying over the middle of the country in a jet, not so hard. But getting from Newark to Belmont in the afternoon, you know, that's the hard eighth of a mile.
That's very true. That's a great point. Well, this was a fabulous performance and one of the highlights on a couple of days.
About the great races you saw on those 2 days, starting with Jackie Moose Warrior and then that Bleecker Street. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, and I thought Jack Christopher was so impressive. Obviously, my horse, and you have a Belmont. I mean, just a lot of really top horses running there. It was quite a show, I thought.
Very much. Maybe
not so much from gambling standpoints, per se, because a lot of the favorites won. But, I mean, but just for loving to watch horses run, I didn't make a bet. You know, just wanted to see those good horses run. So it was really cool.
No doubt. No doubt about it. And a couple of notes as well. Yesterday, I want to slip in. You ran Kirsten Bosch in the Summertime Oaks. Any feedback there?
She was fourth, but she disappointed a little bit. I thought she'd run better. She got a little far back and looked like maybe you couldn't close that deep at that time of the day. So, I mean, she just, didn't really happen the way we wanted it to. So we'll check her out like we always do and figure it out. Obviously, I thought she'd run better than she did.
Well, in addition, you did have a nice maiden win. Since we spoke after you had the but that's just 2 weeks ago, right? When we talked about the Ouija board and all those and Brand
Ouija
and the Daytona.
Board and big switch. That was the Cowbred day. So
that's right.
We got a strong weekend coming up here. We've got I'm bringing back Tripoli in the American Handicap on Sunday, which is a mile turf. So Tripoli won the Pacific Classic last year. So
sure.
We'll start him back on the grass and then switch him over to the dirt at Del Mar. So I'm excited to get him back. He's training very well. So he'll kind of head my Sunday card over here.
Very good. And I'm just looking at what else the two-year-olds. I know there's those two-year-old races. Are you ready with anything there?
I think I'm going to run one. She's going to work here in about a half an hour. A filly named Stone Silent. We bought her in Ocala. It's working very well. She'll go in the filly fast exhibit debutante, training up great. So I think we'll have one in there. It'll be the first two-year-old I've run this year. And then my two-year-olds look like as a group will be ready pretty strong. Start off Del Mar fast.
Excellent. Well, you also had a winner, a Cal winner for Costa over the weekend too. With that Good Vibes Only, the McLean's Music.
Yeah, that's called watching the Garden City lobby on your cell phone. And you start screaming in the lobby, and they wonder what you hear. You're nuts screaming at your phone. So, that was a good win, and it was a good week. We were laughing because on Thursday, they got more rain in New York Thursday than we got all winter out here. We need it. Never rained all winter.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Well, John, a tremendous trip to New York with as exciting a horse as I think horse players and fans have seen in a long time, and in fact Andy Byer says in the first time in 18 years. So there's a point of reference, and you say potentially in 43 years if we're going to go back to Vin.
it's hard to compare different eras and things like that. It's like, how do you compare a Otani to Babe Ruth? It's tough to compare different eras, but he's top class. There's no doubt about that.
Well, you got people very excited for what lies ahead, and a tremendous job. Flavian Pratt, John Sadler, and the team behind Flightline, your Met Mile winner, a very nice addition, obviously, John, to the resume. Continued success, and we'll talk soon. You feels like you've got a loaded wagon for the rest second half of the year.
Yeah, I think we're in good shape. I was just looking at that today. I think we've got a strong Del Mar coming up. Just before we sign off, I'd like to make sure I say hi to Costa and Stephanie. Costa usually is one of your better listeners, so. All right, see you guys. I got to go, Andy.
There it is. John Sadler, everybody. You follow John. He's got two accounts, Sadler Racing and John W. Sadler. Follow both. We're going to follow John Sadler with John DeSantis. Johnny D. Going to swing by. We'll talk to Johnny next. And one of the things I know we're going to talk about with Johnny, John Sadler said, well, it was fun to watch the big performances. I did not have a problem finding things to bet on, and hit three nice multi-race wagers that, and I the one that I would love to have back was the first pick five. And I was nauseous. I could even take a picture, actually, of my handicapping page. That quick flash that won the opener. And I know some people said to themselves after the first two winners, quick flash and Uncle Moonlight. Uncle Moonlight, I had, you know, as an A, and was on Uncle Moonlight for Michelle Nevin. And what a great weekend, in fact, Samantha Siegel. A big JMS weekend. She got the win early on Saturday, and then she won the nightcap at Santa Anita last night. The first two winners, some people thought, oh, there's a speed bias. Easy, folks. Quick flash. Quick flash. In fact, here, I'm going to take a picture, and I'm going to put it up, because here was my handicapping. I had 8.763/2, and usually when I do that, that means to me, when I'm building the tickets, you know, try to include the two. And this was Tally Lynch. She had claimed this gelding off of Rob Atrus for 25, and then was moving into State Bred Allowance Company. And if you go back to the allowance try in December at the end of last year, it was third, beaten three the last time he was put up against, you know, good New York bred allowance types. So when Quick Flash won, I winced, because and then of course run the table from that point. So that early pick five, $1,142. Ugh. So, but there were a couple. I thought there were a couple of things that really worked okay. How about I did something you don't see me do all that often, and I should do more. I usually leave it to Nick Tamaro to explain to you, and that is pressing certain opinions and upping the increment. That middle pick four, races 4, 5, 6, and 7. Yeah, races 4, 5, 6, and 7. We'll discuss this with Johnny. Regal Glory, I didn't think was losing. So I singled her. I went 5 deep in the Brooklyn, because those races have a tendency to confound me a little. Singled Jack Christopher. And then went 2 deep in the Ogden Phipps, Latruska and Carriere, and hit it 10 times. So it came back at $335 for a $50 ticket. So I thought there was plenty of betting opportunities. I 6.25 for that $3 turf pick three. Right? And then closed it out with the last. It's funny, I hit the last pick five. I missed the pick four because I didn't want to spend. I thought, let me just a modest budget here. But for a $60 ticket, that last pick five, races 9 through 13, paid $447. So I'm sorry. I'm not on board with there was no betting opportunities. I've had bigger days in my horse playing career. You know who had a big weekend? Tony Joe. Congratulations to Tony. I got to get you the Belmont Betting Challenge results too. Tony won it. He's the Terminator. He's unbelievable. 15 minutes into hour two. Let's take a break here. Johnny D. We'll get Johnny's take. See how many betting opportunities Johnny took. And more. Later, Kev Humphreys with the first 2 days of opinions for Royal Ascot. Back after this, at the races, recapping the big Belmont Stakes Racing Festival weekend.
racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade,